The Old Testament, the first book of Samuel, chapters 5 and 6. If ever Almighty God had an ironic sense of humor, it is surely here. There is something so laughable about the thought of the Philistines' god Dagon lying flat on his face before the Ark of the Lord. Enough to make a cat laugh. Poor, poor Dagon. And the poor Philistines, who had to worship a chap who fell flat on his face before the symbol of another race's religion. That was very humiliating and speaks more volumes than any words can say. Now, we know little about Dagon, the god of the Philistines, except that he was a Canaanite god, not brought from Crete, the Philistines' original location in the Mediterranean. But his temple still stood until the 4th century BC, in the time of Alexander the Great and the Greek invasion of Palestine after Alexander's defeat of the Persians. 1 Maccabees tells of the destruction of Dagon's temple by fire by one Jonathan, representing Alexander, at Azotus, which seems to have been virtually the end of the Philistines' power on the coastal plain of Palestine, which takes its name from the Philistines, of course. But that was a long time for the Philistines to survive, wasn't it? After the judges, Samuel, David, and the decline of the Israelite monarchy. It's astonishing that they survived so long in the land. What we know about Dagon and his temple nearer the time of our chapters is recorded in Judges chapter 16 in connection with the death of Samson, when the Philistines, you remember, rejoiced at his capture and cruelly put out his eyes, celebrating their victory by praising their god Dagon, who has delivered our enemy into our hands, the one who laid waste our land and multiplied our slain. But you remember that it was the sightless Samson to whom God gave supernatural strength when he was brought out to entertain the Philistines. For by grasping the central pillars of Dagon's temple in Gaza, in a supreme effort preceded by prayer to the Lord, Samson brought their temple down around his neck, killing himself, and, says the text, Judges 16:30, killing more in his death than in his life. Now, obviously, that temple was rebuilt probably many times over the next hundreds of years. But at the point of our chapter, the Philistines took the ark which they had seized up north at Ebenezer, location unknown but near Aphek, and transported their prize, Israel's ark, all the way south to Ashdod, near the coast, the Mediterranean coast, and set it beside the image of Dagon in their temple there. But in the morning, there he lay on the threshold of the temple, with his head and his hands broken off, so that the poor fellow had neither head nor hands to do anything for himself or for his people, the Philistines. Poor Dagon and poor Philistines. And the spot where his bits and pieces lay became so sacred that neither priests nor people would tread on it on entering or leaving the temple, although we are told that the practice of avoiding the threshold of a temple was a widespread taboo in ethnic religions, although it may have started with that. To us, it is simply ironically amusing to imagine their priests and their people hopping and skipping their way over the place where the bits of their God had lain. How pathetic. But it was no laughing matter to the people of Ashdod, although the ark had been useless to Israel's army, you remember, in the hands of Eli's wicked sons, to effect a victory over the Philistines. In the divine economy, despite the fact that in the hands of Eli's wicked sons the ark was useless, it had not lost its power. And notice, this is no longer a contest between the armies of Israel and of the Philistines. The battle is now elevated to higher quarters. It is now a contest between the God of the Philistines, Dagon, and the God of Israel, and the people of Ashdod, in a body, were afflicted. What to do about this? If you look at the New International Version footnote at verse 6, you will see that the Septuagint, that is the Greek translation of the Old Testament scriptures, includes a reference to a plague of wrath appearing in the vicinity, which are well known to carry the bubonic plague, and that causes painful swelling of lymph nodes in the armpits and groin, which, if untreated, is said to be fatal in half the cases. It is interesting that much later, in the 2nd century AD, Josephus, the secular Hebrew historian, was sure that it was a form of dysentery. But that is thought to be less likely than D.J. Wiseman's explanation of bubonic plague. The rest of the story of this chapter, which of course has its dreadful death-dealing side, as far as the Philistines were concerned, has also its tragicomic side. Hasn't it? So the Ashdodites gathered the Philistine rulers together to see what to do. The best they could think of was to palm the horrid box onto another Philistine city, which was not very fraternal, was it? Which was Gath, toward the south. And the epidemic broke out there, and panic ensued, until they decided to send it away north, to the poor people of Ekron. And then they cried out to heaven in sheer desperation, "Send it back to Israel before it kills us all." So after 7 months of this, was the number 7 significant as far as the Lord teaching the Philistines a lesson was concerned, do you think? After 7 months, there was a general conference of the Philistine priests and diviners. Notice the distinction between them and the rulers as to what to do with this lethal box which had scourged the land and people with its fearful pestilence. "Well," said these religious leaders, the priests and diviners of the Philistines, "you can't send the chest back empty. You who have seized it from the Israelites, you will need to send a guilt offering with it, presumably for the crime and sin of having captured it, so as to be sure that our people are healed of this terrible affliction which has decimated the people of the land, and to ward off any evil which might accrue and be perpetuated by the ark's seizure." "All right then, but what sort of offering?" "5 golden rats, 1 for every Philistine city afflicted, and 5 tumors, however their goldsmiths would contrive such fantastic objects." What would the royal jewelers in the West End of London think if they got an order like that? To fashion 5 golden rats and 5 tumors, sent for the medics to draw a design of a tumor. Are these Philistines crazy? Well, they're certainly superstitious enough to believe that it would take something like such an offering as that to appease the Israelites' God for having seized their sacred box. But then, there was tension amongst the Philistine rulers themselves as to what to do about sending back this pestiferous ark. How to do it? There were those more liberal-minded who would have sent back the ark as it was, but the more orthodox challenged them by reminding them of what happened to Pharaoh at the hands of these same Israelites when Pharaoh hardened his heart against them and was destroyed, and they escaped. So it was agreed by the reverend to do a new thing. They would get a new cart and 2 cows, which had never been yoked, and place the ark on the cart along with a chest containing the golden objects. They would send it on its way, watching carefully how and where it went. And if by the animal's own volition they returned to Israelite territory, then, in fact, their God was angry with them for seizing the ark. And that was why all this trouble had come upon them. But if the animals did not go up towards Israelite territory, then it was by chance that they were afflicted. And what happened? These two cows in concert, being yoked together, went straight up to Beth Shemesh. Well, a wonderfully fertile plain is Beth Shemesh. I remember it well. Our car broke down there, and another car came along, and wanting to help, gently drove theirs to the rear of ours. They were Jews, kindly Jews, and they gently pushed ours until it started again, and we were able to drive to the nearest garage. And then continue our viewing the site of where David slew Goliath. So the rulers of the Philistines followed the cart until it reached Israelite territory, where the people of Beth Shemesh were harvesting grain. It was the time of the wheat harvest. And when they saw their ark being drawn by these cows, they were ecstatic, especially when the cart stopped. Why did it stop? Who knows? God knows. The only explanation possible is for you were surely not going to apply the miserable standard of mere coincidence to the happenings in God's holy book, are you? Anybody here is silly as that? No. God controls cows as well as men. A blind bat from Peterhead wrote in Thursday's Press and Journal to say that the Bible as myth is a mixture of fact and fiction. And doubtless he will tell us what he thinks is fact and what fiction. But then when you do that, you make yourself your own God. And who's to say your God is better than the next one's? We're all gods together, with our silly opinions. Better stick to the Bible. Even if people laugh at you, you will have the last laugh, because his word will stand when the universe disappears. The truth is that the God who slew Hophni and Phinehas, the evil sons of Eli, and Uzzah too, you remember? More than 20 years later on, when David brought up the ark from Kiriath Yearim to Jerusalem, Uzzah too. Was slain. The God who slew these men made the beasts make their way to Israelite territory to teach the Philistines a lesson. And apparently, Well, give the Philistines their due. They learned their lesson. It was the silly Israelites who fell down in this instance, wasn't it? For in their ignorance, they opened the ark and looked in. And Beth Shemesh was, according to Joshua 21:16, a Levitical city. They were slain. Shouldn't the people of a Levitical city had more knowledge of God's holy word? Shouldn't they have had more sense? 70 of the men of Beth Shemesh died. Notice again the number. That's God's number. The perfect number, 7. He does things perfectly. It was his ark. And the rulers of the Philistines could have taught a great many of these rude Israelites a thing or two. Give them their due, these priests and diviners of the Philistines. Philip Mwende asked me the other day, what was the significance of the story of the Good Samaritan? What would you have answered that? And among other things we agreed was that it was that God has his understanding people in the most unexpected places. You see, our way of ticketing people and placing them in categories according to our amateurish ideas is often way off the mark as far as God is concerned. He loves to surprise us by the unusual things he does and the people he chooses and blesses. A priest and a Levite were too busy or too proud to care for the wounded traveler. But the Samaritan cared. You see the point? I was talking with Alan Cowie just back from 6 months ministering to the men of 90 factory ships off Lerwick. And he said some of his keenest workers were Roman Catholics. You know, when Gilcomston came out of the Central Churches Association, because they invited the Roman Catholic Cathedral to join us in that association, and we would have had a Roman Catholic priest conducting worship in our church in Easter week, our elders said, no, that was not on. But you know, one of the most spiritual men in that association at that time was the Roman Catholic priest. That doesn't mean we all become Roman Catholics, or even associate with them in their non-Protestant doings, any more than the Israelites should become Philistines because they had better men as priests than their army commanders, and had apparently more sense than these Beth Shemesh Israelites who peered into the sacred ark to see what was in it and paid that fatal price. These Israelite men of Beth Shemesh were surely of the same ilk as Eli's wicked sons, with no respect for sacred things at all, like the Corinthians who got drunk at communion. People like that ask for what they get, even more than poor Uzzah, who only stretched out his hand to steady the ark when the cart lurched and was slain because the ark was being carried by a cart instead of being slung on men's shoulders and carried by rods without touching the ark. The Philistines, of course, wouldn't know about that. But David and Israel should have known and should have read their biblical instructions before attempting to transport the ark from Kiriath-Jearim to Jerusalem. So what's the lesson? Well, it's not about sacred arks or golden rats or spiritually inspired cows, but about people, of course. Why, the Philistines who seized the ark had more respect for it than Israel. Of course, there were bad Israelites, like Eli's sons, as there were bad Philistines, like those who seized the ark. But there were good ones too, on both sides. And that's what counts. It's nothing to God that we make false distinctions in life and in the church. It's nothing in the world to God that I'm up here and most of you are sitting down there. It's what we are before him. Isn't it? He who could take my breath away in the next sentence, or yours. It's what you are to him that counts. And you see, because he is in complete control, he can control arks and cows and men and women and boys and girls according to how he sees they are doing. How then are you doing by him tonight? That's the question. We'll have Rabbi Burns' birthday this week. I'm not absolutely sure about this, but someone can tell me if I'm wrong. It's nice to be wrong sometimes. It saves you from getting airs. But if I'm wrong, never mind. It's the words which are pure Scots anyway, whoever wrote them, and deeply true. You know what's coming? The hert's aye the pert aye that maks us recht or wrang. Translated, the heart is the part, if it is a part, it makes us right or wrong. Do you remember what Jehu said to Jehonadab when he was dealing with Ahab's wicked family? This is what he said to him. Is thine heart right as my heart is with thine heart? And Jehonadab said, it is. And Jehu said, if it be, then give me your hand. And he gave him his hand. And he took him up into his chariot. And he said, come with me and see my zeal for the Lord. So he made him ride in his chariot. Are you and I riding in the Lord's chariot Because you see, if we are, that's everything. Everything. You see, these Philistine priests and diviners were right. If you allow a little for golden rats and tumors, they were right. They left it to God to motivate their cows. And the cows did the right thing. And then these silly Israelites did the wrong thing and suffered for it, 70 of them. Do you see what the word is saying to us? Be right with God. How important this is. I wouldn't leave my house on the Lord's Day, morning or evening, without making a sure as God will make me that I'm right with Him. Have your heart always right with Him. And that's everything. It's absolutely everything. For everything that is good and blessed and fruitful flows from that. Because, you see, we've been singing about it in the hymns tonight. He is in control of everything. Not only cows, but men.